Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello and welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again to the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today, of course, is Friday. I hope all of you out there are gearing up for an awesome weekend. I cannot tell you how excited I am about this weekend. No real specific reason other than it's gloomy here and plenty of good opportunity to stay home, read some good books, maybe play a little guitar this weekend, just have a good weekend of no shopping is on my agenda this weekend. I have to admit, I'm pretty sure I'm finished with my Christmas shopping. Obviously, this is the last weekend that we all have to go out and accomplish all of that for the season. And I'm pretty sure I'm done, or at least my bank account is telling me that I'm done. So if you haven't gotten a gift for me yet, better luck next year. I don't know what to tell you. No, I'm just joking. There's some stuff waiting in the wings for the important people in my life. I hope all of you out there are having a wonderful holiday season so far. I hope that you guys find some time to have some rest and some peace over this weekend, because obviously this next weekend is going to be crazy. Lots of traveling, lots of stuff going on, lots of friends and family invading our faces. But those are the important things in life, ladies and gentlemen, is remembering that that the people around us are the people that really our lives come. So I hope all of you out there are surrounded with people that do that. And for those of you who are tuning in to our show every day, I hope that we are part of that for you out there. I really appreciate everybody who tunes in the show today. People who are checking out the website, very, very cool. Want to, again, draw your attention to the top of redpillreport.com, please. Oh, man, I just don't know how to say this. Please go get the article regarding mortgage crisis issue. We obviously had a huge deal earlier this week with Scott Bennett and Greg Morse on, and made some pretty big headway in terms of trying to explain the total, all-encompassing ridiculousness that this whole story encompasses. And so, again, coming up on holiday season here, guys, a great opportunity to get these articles out and get them in front of people. Also, right at the top of redpillreports.com, is a link to Greg Morse's petition, which is literally the best answer that we have right now defeating this criminal organization of bankers. And I'll tell you what, at the 11 o'clock hour today, Andrew Gause is going to be joining us again. Now, Andrew Gause, for those of you who may not know, is a nationally recognized U.S. monetary historian and numismatic expert. He's written a couple of different books on economy and the true nature of money and things like that. And obviously, there's a lot going on in the economy right now. So we will be talking to Andrew at the 11 o'clock hour. I definitely want you guys to stay tuned for that. We're going to talk about Russia. I think there's a lot of misconceptions going on in right now. And we're going to talk with Andrew about monetary fundamentals. And I think maybe by the end of the program today, we're going to pose the question, where would you rather right now, in the United States or in Russia? And I think maybe, perhaps, you guys will be surprised with the answer that Andrew comes up with. Anyway, that will be at the 11 o'clock hour. We're obviously going to not have those weekends, because we're all live Friday. Monday, Jamie Hanshaw is going to be joining us again. We had a very interesting discussion with her last time she was on about the Monarch mind control programming and how it affects pop stars and how they are essentially normalizing symbolism and this whole monarch culture of MK Ultra. They're normalizing it with pop with pop media and, you know, pop singers and things like that. So we'll probably get into a little bit more of that on Monday. So I hope that you guys will tune in for that as well. Please, again, go get these mortgage crisis articles and get them printed out so you can explain exactly what's going on to your friends and family, and then get this petition in front of them. We are making some serious headway on this thing, and I think that we can actually win on this battle. And this is probably one of the only battles that we can actually win out there. So I'm really excited to be part of the team that is here at Red Pill Reports, also with Greg Morse and Scott Bennett, just two of the greatest gentlemen that I've had the privilege of meeting in my life. So very, very excited to be a part of that. Unfortunately, it does stem from such a negative issue, but, you know, sometimes it's the negative that pulls us all together. Anyway, let's jump over into the news. There is obviously a lot going on. There always seems to be a lot happening in the news. And for those of you guys who are new to the program, this is something we try and do every single day. For the first hour, we go over all the pertinent of the day, trying to explain a little bit about the agenda that seems to be, you know, pushing these pieces of information that we call mainstream media to the forefront, and to discover a little bit about what that agenda is. The wind is really blowing. So what we do around here, and then 11 o'clock, the second hour of the program, we always have a fantastic guest, and the guys behind the scenes, Rob and Fletch, do such a great job keeping this whole shebang rolling down the hill here, so can't thank those guys enough either. So anyway, let's jump over into some international news right now. I do have to tell you also that if you go to redpillreports.com and get into the show section, which is always there at the top of the page, you'll be able to find out quite a bit about the guests. You'll always see the guest links there if you want to go check them out before they come onto the program. And also there will be a cornucopia of news links, most of which I won't be able to get to. But if you're curious about what we here at Red Pill think is important, that will be a very good place for you to go and check. And for those of you who check every day, I cannot thank you guys enough. So, news coming out of the Middle East right now. Kurdish forces, backed by U.S.-led warplanes, have now recaptured a large area in Iraq near the Syrian border in an offensive against the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, according to a top U.S. commander. More than 50 airstrikes in recent days by coalition aircraft have resulted in allowing those Kurdish forces to maneuver and regain approximately 100 square kilometers of ground near Sinjar. And this is, of course, according to the Lieutenant General James Terry, who is head of the U.S.-led campaign against the ISIL group, and he reported all of this on Wednesday. Kurdish Peshmerga forces said earlier that they had captured several villages and were rolling back the ISIL fighters around Sinjar in the country's northwest. And the capture of Sinjar by ISIL fighters in early August and the plight of the mostly Yazidi minority population there was cited by President Barack Obama as one of the biggest reasons for U.S. military intervention. So a little bit of success apparently coming out of the Kurdish forces near the Syrian border, as they are apparently able to recapture quite a bit of the land that they lost to ISIL. So you know, are we moving in the right direction there? It's kind of difficult to say at this point. You know, you need a spreadsheet to keep all these different parties separate. But let's see here. Also, two senior Islamic State group leaders were apparently killed in a U.S. and coalition airstrikes in the northwest Iraq over the last week, according to U.S. officials. And Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel approved new orders for several hundred troops to deploy to Iraq to train Iraqi forces. So this is a new group of people going to Iraq at the behest of Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. According to one of the U.S. officials, airstrikes killed a key deputy of the Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic State militants. Now, this is interesting because we've already reported his death once. You know, about a month ago, Abu al-Baghdadi was apparently killed in an airstrike. So is it true this time? Who knows? I guess we'll have to wait and see. But this gentleman, al-Baghdadi, maybe he's part cat. He's got a lot of lives, I guess. I don't know what's going on with that. But apparently we killed him again. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Happy to be part of this whole team. And then Reuters has actually got a pretty startling report today talking about the airstrikes in Syria, saying essentially that now that all of the thick, large, easy to hit targets are have apparently been destroyed. The people who are part of this coalition with us, you know, the other participating members, haven't really been participating in any airstrikes, apparently, to a tune of about 3% of the airstrikes apparently being carried out by some of our quote-unquote allies in the region, which leaves the other 97% in the month of December, which have been carried out by the United States alone. So is it really a coalition of the willing, or is it more a coalition of the coerced? I think probably the latter is more likely at this point. But the U.S. still dropping bombs over in Syria and pretending that we have some sort of coalition, you know, forces joining us, but doesn't seem to be the case when you really look at the statistics. Here's another story coming out of Vice News. Vice News is one of these organizations that I really respect. They do great, great undercover type of investigations, but apparently this issue going on between the U.S. and Cuba was not the only major revelation that came out of the story this week. During midnight, 20th of December, so just tomorrow, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, also called FARC, or C, which is the hemisphere's long-standing insurgency, they announced in this Cuba thing went on earlier this week, they announced that it's now an infinite, unilateral, albeit additional ceasefire. And this is, of course, according to rebel commanders and their announcement in Havana. Now, the FARC leadership has been gathering in Cuba for the last 2 years negotiating a peace accord with the Colombian government that would bring an end to 50 years of open rebellion. And up until this point, however, parties had continued hostilities even in the midst of these talks. But it has appeared now that there are some conditions that are going along with this ceasefire. This seems to be the largest move towards peace that we have seen coming out of Colombia in the last 50 years. So it's funny that as the war around the world seems to be fomenting, there are still instances of peace that are popping up all over the place. You know, you can only really take as a positive sign, I think, at this point. Moving over back into the Palestinian area, Palestine has officially now submitted a UN resolution against Israeli occupation. So the draft was presented to the UN by Jordan, according to the Palestinian envoy to the UN. It was presented at a press conference just on Wednesday. The draft seeks a final settlement deal with Israel within the next 12 months and a complete Israeli withdrawal by the end of 2017. There was a different UN potential, what do you want to call it, resolution that was suggested earlier in the month by France, and they were looking for a 2016 removal of Israel from Palestine, but they've decided to soften that just a touch to try and kind of bolster the ability to actually accomplish this goal. So we'll see if that actually gets accomplished or not, I think. I don't have to go on to tell you what Netanyahu has to say about all of that. And then another interesting story from Italy coming out of Reuters right now. The Italian finance police on Wednesday arrested 17 people accused of running an international money laundering ring through a British-based money transfer service company, which was used to shuttle illegal proceeds abroad, mostly to China, according to this report. Managers of the Rome branches of SIGU Global Services Limited were among those suspected of international conspiracy and money laundering that investigators said amounted to more than 1 billion euros or $1.24 billion in just the last 2 years. Sounds like a great job if you can get it. And the bulk of the cash leaving Italy went to China in hundreds of thousands of transactions just under the limit, which is now set at 1,000 euros, at which strict money laundering regulations are applied. And this is according to the financial police colonel, Claudio Petraziola, and that's what he was telling the reporters from Reuters, said no taxes were paid on any of the money transferred, causing a loss of about 500 million euros to the Italian state. So big time financial shakeup occurring in Italy right now. That's very interesting. You wonder who exactly is responsible for all that. We don't really know. Probably won't really know for a while here. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in national news right now. Kind of an unusual story coming out of the White House regarding this Sony hack, which for all intents and purposes should really affect the United States because, you know, obviously Sony isn't really here. But apparently news from the White House right now is that the hack of Sony is being treated as a national security matter. And this according to the White House spokesman named Ernest. He is, let's see here, what is he? He's the press secretary, Josh Ernest, but he says that there are meetings taking place every day discussing the matter, and that they are, in fact, treating this as a national security matter. So, and they're actually even going further than that, saying that it makes some kind of response with Korea. We'll get into some tech news here a little bit. There's a story I wired today, which essentially talks about reality. I know is, you know, a difficult thing for people in the government to understand, but he outlines the fact that you can't really trace hackers, and this whole connection to North Korea is pretty flimsy at best. But the interesting situation that the White House is gearing up for some kind of response to that hacking, so we'll have to wait and see exactly what their response is going to be. Coming out of Los Angeles, another interesting story here as federal agents and police in Los Angeles have recovered 9 paintings worth millions of dollars that were stolen from a home of an elderly couple 6 years ago. And one of the works was a Chagall, the other was one of the others was a Diego Rivera, and this is according to the FBI spokeswoman. The paintings were recovered in an FBI sting operation in which a suspect identified as Paul Espinoza, who is 45, was arrested as he tried to sell the stolen artwork to undercover agents, according to again, FBI spokeswoman Laura Emilier. Let's see. She said authorities are also looking for 3 additional paintings stolen from the from the couple's home in the Encino neighborhood of Los Angeles back in 2008 in a daylight art heist that ranks amongst the biggest in the city's history. They are also still now undergoing more investigation, and they are trying to find 1 or 2 additional suspects. So that's very interesting. They found a major art thief in Los Angeles. Kind of cool, I suppose. And another silly police-related story, and this is good, maybe it's not. Police had pepper spray on Wednesday to disperse an unruly crowd of 300 people lined up at a mall in Toledo, Ohio, for a chance to buy the Air Jordan sneakers, because obviously that should be a priority to all of us right now, is getting them new Air Jordans. All right, people began lining up in front of the Franklin Park Mall at about 3:30 in the morning for tickets passed out by the employees of Finish Line, which is a national shoe chain. The ticket allowed them to buy the Nike Air Jordan Retro 11 Legend Blues, which go on sale for about $200 on Saturday. And according to the police officers there, it got pretty crazy. They said the crowd got unruly, and they had to basically disperse the crowd. It's not the first time this has happened. But who are these people that are out at 4 o'clock in the morning getting unruly? I can't even imagine thinking about trying to buy some shoes at 4 o'clock. I'm thinking about coffee. At best, if I'm even thinking about getting out of bed, thinking about coffee 3 hours from 4 o'clock. But who are these people that are out getting riled up about tennis shoes 4 o'clock morning? I don't know. Maybe he did some pepper spray. Who knows? I don't know. Okay. There's a city in Tennessee that has just now outlawed freedom of speech. Yep. You think I'm kidding, but this is South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. The city council approved, by a 4-to-1 ratio, an all-inclusive social networking policy aimed at discouraging criticism of the government. That's right. It outlaws the exercise of the First Amendment for all city-elected representatives, appointed board members, employees, volunteers, vendors, contractors, and anyone associated with the town in an official capacity who uses social networks. This is according to Ryan Lewis, who writes for the Times Free Press. The policy includes blogs, videos, Facebooks, and Twitter posts, and any and all online discussions. So essentially, if you're somebody who's elected as a representative and you go onto, you know, the city's Facebook site and you start knocking other members, that might be considered a little bit crass, but doesn't necessarily need to be outlawed. I mean, we're talking about freedom of speech on a public forum, but apparently limiting the freedom of speech is just an industry standard these days. So they're not saying you can't post anything on Facebook. They're just saying they don't want you to post anything that sheds a negative light on any person, entity, board, or things of that nature. So you can go ahead and post all you want as long as it doesn't have anything to do with the government. So freedom of speech happening all around, guys. There you go. South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. If it was me, I would probably find that municipality's Facebook page and have some choice words for it, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe you guys would follow suit with that. Here's a great story. I love this. This makes me laugh really hard. Minnesota State Representative asking for a little bit of a refund from Mr. Jonathan Gruber, namely to the tune of $329,000, citing Eric Gruber's beyond laughable error rates with his system that he put together for Minnesota called Minnesota Shore, or MN Sure. So in recent weeks, the governor of Minnesota, we're talking about Davis here, wrote a letter expressing significant concerns regarding the contracts between the state of Missouri and Dr. Jonathan Gruber entered into in March of 2011, and especially in light of the troubling remarks by Dr. Gruber. He thinks that a review of Dr. Gruber's work and payment to him is probably necessary. And this article goes on and essentially talks about the fact that Gruber was 4 months late in delivering just about every single aspect of his contract. And it's fantastic because none of the deliverables that were outlined in the contract actually correlate to the bills that he turned in. And yet, for some reason, Minnesota decided to pay him. So I think Mr. Gruber is going to be taking a walk on the plank here pretty soon, and I think that's probably pretty understandable given everything that he said in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, open mouth, insert foot doesn't really cover exactly everything that's going on with him. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on what's going on with Mr. Gruber. I hope some jail time for fraud is in his future, not going to lie. Also want to remind everybody again about the situation that's unfolding in Utah right now. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but the Utah, very, very serious in their demand, having public lands turned back over to the state from the federal government, and they are not backing down on this. So this is just a little reminder that on the 31st of December, the state of Utah is formally demanding that Washington, D.C. relinquish control over more than 30 million acres of valuable land currently controlled by various federal bureaucracies. Now, this escalating battle obviously started back in 2012 when the Republican government, Governor Gary Herbert, riding the wave of public outrage over federal abuses and land grabs, signed the popular Transfer of Public Lands Act. And among other elements, what's interesting about this is that the law calls for the federal government obviously to hand over control, but it also commissioned a study which just got released this month, kind of examining various aspects of the process and the finances, and including in that report how Utah would manage the land it is calling on the federal government to relinquish. And according to that study, contrary to the hysterical claims of pseudo-environmentalists and federal supremacists demanding ever greater financial federal land grabs, transferring the lands to Utah would likely be profitable for the state. Indeed, if Utah controlled its own lands, as opposed to the bureaucrats and politicians far away Washington, D.C., who siphon away much of this wealth and mismanage the resources, the state could easily bring in enough revenue to cover the costs of managing lands and then some. According to the researchers, the vast swaths of federal land represent an overall drag on the state economy, especially in 20 of 29 counties where the feds apparently own more than 4% of land. So Utah, on the 31st of December, is going to be making some pretty significant shifts, and I really do fully support that. So interesting stuff going on in Utah. All these other states are really starting to kind of make me wonder about not being in Missouri anymore, I'm not going to lie. Moving back over into California right now, here's another interesting story. No charges are being planned right now or being filed against a California police officer who was in possession of between 4 and 5 pounds of marijuana at his home in Oakley, California. Officer Joe Avila, who is a 17-year veteran of the Richmond Police Force, has been under investigation by the Richmond Police Force since January, according to the Richmond Confidential. It was about this time that the RPF began noticing that Avila was not filing any follow-up reports for about 37 calls of service he has gone on. So one of those calls was to a UPS store back in November of 2018, where it was expected that Avila had collected the marijuana and then failed to turn the drugs over to the department's evidence. Robin Lepit, who is the county chief public defender, told Restore, giving him some slack, obviously, because he's a law officer. Anybody else found with 5 pounds of marijuana in their possession, I don't care who it is, that person is going to be charged with a crime. So here's where this story gets, you guys, is that while under this investigation, he said that he used 2 of the 5 pounds to help train his drug dog. Okay. Although the other drugs, yeah, I don't really remember what happened to those. But here's the stickler, is that while this investigation was underway, Avila was a key witness in a case where he helped secure a conviction in another drug case against a civilian, okay? The deputy public defender, McNamara, who represented the defendant in the case, is obviously a clear ethics violation. They have a constitutional mandate to disclose evidence to us prior to a trial. If there is an officer on the case who has been discredited, then we have the right to know that, according to McNamara. So what's happening is the DA's office is taking a position that the officer did nothing wrong, and because they think that he didn't do anything wrong, they're not turning over any information. And so they have a vested interest in not affecting that officer's credibility because it impacts all the other cases they're trying to prosecute. Unbelievable. So as of right now, Avila, of course, it's on paid vacation, just like you would do. I'm going to become a cop. I just think that's got to be the best job in the world if you can get it, because you can really do no wrong. Anyway, we're going to go to a 3-minute break, you guys. Thank you guys for sticking with us. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming. We're going to come back. We've got some economic stuff and some health stuff and some finance stuff, lots of things to discuss. Keep it here at 11 also. Second hour of the program, Andrew Gauze will be joining us, and we'll have a very interesting economic discussion about Russia and the collapsing shale industry in the United States. Keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio, right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault. 20 seed varieties for only $37.95. Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine. including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine now, only at hempusa.org.
Live from Dublin, Ireland.
The Earth Needs Rebels Show with Kev Bull.
Monday through Friday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. For sticking with us through that 3 minute break, we are right kind of going the news that's coming at us across the news wire right now, and I want to jump into some quick economic updates. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the economy today just because we've got Andrew Gause coming on in about a half an hour, and we're going to have a very deep economic discussion when that does happen. But just to give you guys an idea of what is going on, I think yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, and you can go back and listen to the show and you let me know if I'm accurate or not, but I'm pretty sure I said, I think tomorrow, 17,800 was going to be Dow. So let's over and look where Dow is at right now. Oh my goodness, 1779.24. So I missed it by 76 cents, ladies and gentlemen. Do not think for a second that that is because I have any kind of economic insight or have any idea what's actually going on, other than the fact that I am aware that the feds have once again decided that they are not going to raise interest rates by using terms like patience or after a considerable amount of time at their meeting. And what happens every time the Fed says that? Well, stocks go crazy. So that's apparently what happened yesterday. And yesterday was actually pretty meteoric. If it was a day, then I would even say it was up 420 points. By the end of the, it is right now about 8 points. I said 7-8, I think is going to be where we end up sitting in the next half hour or so. So interesting that I finally got one right, ladies and gentlemen. There you go. And gold coming up a little bit, but really staying right at that $1,200 mark, which you could pretty much consider to be flat at this point, because obviously as stocks go up, nobody is interested in commodities anymore for some very strange reason. Unless you're China or Russia, and we'll get into that in just a second. But gold sitting at $11.98 right now will get you an ounce of gold, and $16.05 big pennies will buy you an ounce of silver as well. Let's look at oil is doing its spin down. We had a height yesterday of almost $59, and then it actually sank all the way down to $54 again. And right now we are sitting just below $56. There does seem to be a little bit of a rise happening. We're about 3% up, so $55.72 for a barrel of oil right now. It's going to be interesting to watch what goes on with this shale industry. Here's a report coming out of Bloomberg today talking about the oil crash exposing new risks for the U.S. shale drillers. It goes on to say that tumbling oil prices have exposed a new weakness in the insurance that some of the U.S. shale drillers bought to protect themselves against a crash. At least six different companies, including Pioneer Natural Resource Company and the Noble Energy Company, used a strategy which is known as a three-way collar that does not guarantee a minimum price if crude falls below a certain level, according to the company filings. While the three-way can be cheaper than other hedges, they can leave drillers exposed to very, very steep declines. And I'm not going to go through this entire thing because I'll talk to Andrew, as I said, in about 25 minutes. But essentially what's going on is this three-way hedges risks. The three-way hedges risks exacerbated by a cash squeeze for companies trying to cope with the biggest oil plunge in the decade. So, for example, West Texas Intermediate Crude, which is the best benchmark, 50% since June. Obviously, it's this worldwide glut that we apparently are seeing, and OPEC obviously in November decided to hold production steady. So could be pretty interesting times ahead. Again, Andrew's got some insight on that for us, so I'll get away from that for just a second. The Swiss National Bank, following suit with what we saw coming out of Germany last month, Switzerland's National Bank right now is going to be bringing in a negative interest rate, cutting the value of large sum of money deposit in the money. So the bank is imposing a rate of negative 0.25% on what they call sight deposits, a form of instant account, and for those instant access deposit accounts of more than 10 million Swiss francs, the bank will now be imposing this negative 0.25% rate. So essentially what it's trying to do is lower the value of the Swiss franc, which has risen recently, of course, according to, you know, what's going on in Russia and things like that. But this is going to be a hallmark of the discussion that I want to have with Andrew today. Why do we see all this fighting to either bolster the value of a currency in of a country or to let value of a currency fall, and how those things relate to the price of imported goods? Because one of the stories we had this week about Russia was all the people rushing out to buy things as the economy started to falter. But what I've realized recently, and by recently I mean yesterday, is that they actually were not out buying staples. We're not talking about the situation where they were buying, you know, food, water, things like that, all the things you would need because you wouldn't be able to get it. They were at IKEA. You know, they actually bought so many Apple products that Apple decided they were going to stop selling because Apple was losing its shirt on these sales, because as the economy goes down there, the cost of importing goods is going to go up. So people were trying to get in on that before the cost of the imported goods rose in relation to their economic downturn. So really unusual stuff going on in Russia. And again, you know, I'm not an economic expert by any means, but it certainly is. So stay here 20 minutes. We'll get to the bottom of all this, guys. And just as a little side note here, we're talking about gold and futures. The prices seem to be pretty similar. We had that very unusual story about the German bank stepping away from his physical desk the other day. So we, you know, keep an eye on what's going on in physical. But there are reports right now that Chinese people, not the government in China, but actually like Chinese civilians, bought a whole lot of gold last week. They actually bought 39 tons of gold, which is, you know, that's the amount of gold you would expect a federal, you know, centralized bank to pick up. That's a major, major, major pickup. And so, you know, the people in China, you can't stop them from buying gold at this point. So that's what's happening there. Is it going to, you know, bleed over into the financial market here? Are we going to see a result, you know, a resulting increase in the cost of gold here in our country? I don't know. We'll see. Let's move on to some tech news. There's some wacky stuff going on in the world. First story I want to talk about is Amazon. They really ruffled some feathers yesterday. They have announced, as of yesterday, 1 hour delivery in Manhattan. 1 hour delivery. It's called Prime Now. And if you are part of the Amazon Prime network, then this is a service that is available to you. Happening in New York, just kicked off this week. They're hoping to expand it to other cities. And they are charging right now only $8 for a delivery within an hour, and 2 hour delivery in the city of Manhattan is free. I can't believe it. This has kind of been the holy grail of the non brick and mortar stores, you know, to try and, really bolster their way in on that, you know, that intimacy that brick and mortar stores have, the ability to go and just get something right when you need it. Obviously, Amazon has been trying to do this for a long time. And because of this new program, they're saying that 25,000 items available for free on Prime Now program. So very stuff. Amazon, not doing it by drone, unfortunately, are man right capable of delivering 25,000 products in an hour, 2 hours free. That's just believable. What's going to go on with that? Let's see here. German researchers have discovered a security flaw, or security flaws, I should say, that could let hackers, spies, and criminals listen to private phone calls and intercept text messages on potentially massive scale, even when cellular networks are using the most advanced encryption now available. These flaws, reported at a hacker conference in Hamburg are the latest evidence of widespread insecurity on the SS7 network. This is the global network that allows the world's cellular carriers to route calls, texts, and other services to each other. Experts say it is increasingly clear that the SS7, which was first designed back in the 1980s, is riddled with serious vulnerabilities that undermine the privacy of the world's billions of cellular customers. The flaws discovered by the German researchers are actually functions built into the SS7 for other purposes, like keeping calls connected as users speed down a highway, switching from cell tower to cell tower. That hackers, these additional functions, say, built into the SS7, these researchers say that hackers then can repurpose them for civilians surveillance based on lack security of the network. Those skilled at the myriad functions built into the SS7 can locate callers anywhere in the world, listen to calls as they happen, or record hundreds of encrypted calls and texts at a time for later decryption. There's also potential to defraud users and cellular carriers by using the SS7 functions, according to these researchers. So, globally, your cell phones, not secure. That's essentially the long and the short of it here, guys. Is even as we're moving to this 3G technology, even if the 3G network in the nation is secure, SS7 still underlies the whole thing, and different 3G networks have to use SS7 to pass on phone calls from one to the other. So it's the vulnerabilities of the SS7 network itself that people are saying is going to leave us all, well, pretty much high and dry in terms of our own privacy. And I'll tell you what, there's another really big story coming out, and this is one that nobody is talking about. ICANN, I-C-A-N-N. Maybe you guys have heard of them, maybe you have not. But I'll tell you what, they are the heart of the Internet, ICANN. This is it. They are the U.S.-based overseer of the Internet structure and naming system, okay? So maybe you guys know what a DNS server is, maybe you don't, but essentially, all of the big internet providers have what's called a DNS server. And a DNS server is part of the program where when you go to Google and you type in Google, it takes that text, that Google text, and it goes and it checks it against a spreadsheet. That spreadsheet is on the DNS server, and it says, well, hey, that name correlates to, well, in the case of Google, 8.8.8.8. That's Google's DNS server address. So there has to be a system called DNS that essentially makes the internet happen, because without that exchange from English or whatever language you're typing in to actual physical IP address, you'll never make that connection. A lot of people have that problem, and a lot of, viruses or Trojans or all that kind of stuff, that's what their real name of the game is. That's the most annoying type of Trojan that you could get is something that will come into your system and disrupt your ability to connect to DNS, because that will obviously limit you from being able to go anywhere on the website forever or anywhere on the internet forever. Why is this ICANN story important? Well, because they got hacked, ladies and gentlemen. ICANN is the organization that keeps track of all of the DNS for all of the internet. We're talking about, this is, there's no other organization that is more important to the integrity of the internet than ICANN, which is why it is so unusual that this little bitty internet corporation, in names and numbers, obviously being responsible for handling a majority of the internet domain names, is here in America. It's based in Los Angeles and has no oversight whatsoever. But there was a major spear phishing attack, which is a common tool of hackers. They use it to forge trusted to access private data, and it's obviously a popular fraud and hacking technique. But that's essentially what happened. They're also saying that's probably what happened to Sony, is the spear phishing attack. But if ICANN, and what they're reporting is that the main bulk of their data, which you would know what you would want to call that, I guess their central zone or their data service area, the database that contains zone files, map the path between IP addresses, and the name of the domains was compromised, which people, hackers, were in there rooting around. Not good. I mean, we're talking about the willful, total destruction of the internet. All somebody has to do is go and scramble ICANN. That's it, guys. Internet's toast. So very unusual that that happened. Very unusual that they disclosed it. We'll have to wait and see what the result is going to be as a result of that. Let's see here. moving on from that particular story, there is, as I mentioned earlier, a fantastic article in Wired today talking about the evidence that North Korea hacking Sony is fairly flimsy. And I'm not going to go through this entire thing, but I fully agree with this article, talking about the fact that when most hackers are hacking, they're using proxies, they're using false IP addresses, they do everything they can to cover their tracks, and sometimes will fall clues inside their malware to get off the trail, and then that's probably what we're seeing here. The bottom line is that even if this was a nation-state attack against Sony, it's so difficult to distinguish that because the level of sophistication and their MO is just really difficult to put your finger on, and it's very, very difficult to actually attribute this attack to one organization or another. So let's see. I personally don't believe necessarily that that we could really put our finger on North Korea from this attack, but there's some pretty substantial evidence to suggest that that is a very flimsy connection, and probably has more to do with a desire by the White House to bolster some kind of response to say that, you know, try and do, again, you know, any type of crisis that we have, we don't want to waste. So if we can do something now to continue our draconian control over the internet, obviously they're going to initiate some kind of plan to make that happen. It wouldn't even surprise me if, you know, Obama got wind of the CEO from Sony's racist emails and decided to make an example of them. But, you know, again, all bets are off at this point in terms of Sony. Moving on here, this is an interesting story coming out of IntelliHub right now. There have been over 1 million mummified bodies found in Egypt, and some of them, one of them for sure, apparently is more than 7 feet tall. Right now, more than 1,700 mummified bodies of an estimated 1 million have been unearthed in a necropolis south of Cairo. It appears that some of the mummies were approximately 1,500 years old at the time when Rome controlled swaths of Egypt. However, discovery has scientists kind of scratching their heads right now because they literally have no explanation where all of these bodies came from, and one of them was reported to be more than 7 feet tall. The project director from Brigham Young University, which is in Utah, said that every 5 by 5 square meters of sand excavated, at least 40 bodies have been found, which is obviously showing the true significance of the site. What is also interesting about this is that most of the bodies were buried without a coffin, but key features of the bodies, like the brains, the tongues, the nails, seem to be very well preserved. And then another interesting caveat to this entire story is that the mummies were also reported to have been segregated into different burial sections based on hair color. Isn't that interesting? Conversation with L.A. Marzulli the other day about the idea that there could potentially be a history of tall, red-headed type people on the planet, and that's exactly what they're saying here. They have some of them were segregated. The blondes were segregated into one area, and all of the red-headed people were segregated into another area. So again, we're seeing blonde head burials, we're seeing red burials, very interesting stuff here right now. But really, the cemetery actually spans over 300 acres. I mean, we're talking about a huge, huge, huge area. And most of the bodies appear to have been poor people or common folk, according to the Daily Mail. Very interesting stuff coming out of Egypt right now. It really makes you wonder how much longer people were living in Egypt than we're actually being told from the mainstream right now. At least it makes me wonder that. I don't know what you guys want. That's what I wonder. Let's move on to some health news right now. Bad news coming out of Sierra Leone, as they have officially canceled Christmas due to the Ebola virus still ravaging the country. So the children of Sierra Leone have really only got the police to look forward to this holiday season, as the agency France Presse recently announcing that Christmas has been officially canceled in the Ebola-stricken West African nation. According to the AFP, state officials are prohibiting any public displays or celebrations of Christmas, citing escalating Ebola rates in what has been declared the worst Ebola outbreak in history. Citizens of Sierra Leone will be required to stay in their houses and will be promptly ushered back to their homes if they are caught out in the streets. Right now, soldiers are being deployed into the streets throughout the festive period, forcing people venturing out into the streets back indoors. Sierra Leone is reportedly the hardest hit country, claiming more than 8,000 confirmed cases of the disease and more than 2,000 deaths, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And I'll tell you what, my hearts and prayers go out completely to the people of Sierra Leone right now. I think this is an orchestrated event, and it just breaks my heart. Okay, let's get on to something positive here for just a second. I ran across this article on a website called The Mind Unleashed, and I really like it. It resonated with me, and I think because it's Friday, you know, and obviously things going on in the world, this article kind of spoke to me, so I was going to read it to you guys. And this is about rebooting your life, about changing your mentality, about 20 mental barriers that you should let go of. Probably the most important part of this discussion, I'll just open it right up, is you guys have to remember that you guys are eternal consciousness traveling around the world in a genetic spacesuit. That's it. You're not your body. You're not your job. You're not the roles that you play. You're not the people that you want to be on TV. You are eternal consciousness trapped in a meat popsicle, as was mentioned by Bruce Willis in The Fifth Element. That's it. That's the long and the short of it, guys. So anyway, let's talk about some of these mental barriers that people have that are affecting your ability to actually understand your place in the universe and to be happy as we travel around in our genetic spacesuits here. First one, let go of attachments. My goodness, according to Buddhist philosophy, attachment is one of the roots of all suffering, and I really personally cannot more. We attach ourselves to all sorts of things. The most self-slapping institutions in the universe. Attached to something, how much are you attached to it? Is it keeping you back from something else? Is it making you suffer? Look at it. Look at the things that you pretend are important in your life and break that illusion. Every single attachment that you have can be broken if need be. So do that if you know, to things. You know, your things end up controlling you, ladies and gentlemen. So remembering hierarchy in reality is very important. Also, let go of guilt. Guilt does nothing, has no function in society whatsoever. It's often the projection of other people's insecurities onto you that results in guilt. What in the world could you possibly gain by holding on to guilt, guys? Okay, so let's let go of that. Let's let go of negative thinking. Pessimistic thoughts and negative attitudes keep you locked in a dark aura that permeates into every single thing you do. Thoughts, just like every other thing on the planet, guys, are frequency. They involve intention. Okay, if you are pessimistic and you're presenting that out into the world, that's the world that's going to be presented back to you. And that's not just me saying that. That is absolute fact, ladies and gentlemen. So just please let go of the negative thinking. We're moving into the holiday season right now. This is it. This is a great time to do it, especially consider all this your New Year's resolutions, guys. Okay, let's let go of self-criticism also. Boy, I could take a page from this book. I'll tell you what, let's see. Many times we are the biggest in the neck. We criticize ourselves with the best of intentions, but then go over the acceptable limit. Criticism turns to disempowering messages. Let go of that. Be kind and be gentle to yourself and be kind and gentle to those around you. Remember, everybody is fighting a battle that you don't know about, okay? Let's let go of prejudice. Wow, there's a concept. Prejudice keeps you bitter and resentful. It restricts your opportunities to connect meaningfully with others. Let it go. Let go of compulsive thinking. Do you keep on thinking about something or do you keep on doing something because you just feel like you have to do it even though there's no reason? Okay, it's time to honestly reflect on its usefulness and its side effects, okay? Let go of the need for others' approval. We don't need to be validated by others. We often seek approval in other people, but this is attention-seeking behavior and one which threatens our own self-confidence and our own authenticity. Your goal in life is to be authentically you. I tried to be other people, and I looked around, and it turns out everybody else was already taken. So I figured, you know what? I'm just going to be the best me that I could be. And I think that's the best message that we can pull out of all of this. Let go of your limiting beliefs, guys. Most of our limits are self-imposed. Life does not have any defined limits. Our beliefs do. Learn to identify those beliefs, which narrow down your possibilities for action, and let go of them, okay? Let go of grudges. Put it this way, are bad for your heart. Keep them long enough or numerous enough, and your health will eventually suffer. Also, no, there's no actual detrimental effect to the people that you are carrying on a drudge again in their lives. Just letting you know that. You can hate somebody as much as you want. Call them up on the phone and ask them how it's affecting them. They probably won't even know. I mean, really, that's what it is. Hatred gives somebody that you don't like a permanent home in your heart, guys. That's what it does. So let it go, okay? Let go of the I'll get to it tomorrow attitude. This is a delaying tactic of your self-consciousness, which is trying to sabotage you from accomplishing important tasks. Try to be aware of it when you think of it and consciously push it and push yourself to do at least the first part of a goal. Naturally, you will then continue the whole task, because the hard part is always the beginning. Let go of anxious thoughts. These are born out of fear of the unknown and uncertainty about the future. The thought that something unpleasant may happen is only an unreal thought we have created ourselves, right? Ask yourself, is this thought based on real evidence? Let go of past heartbreaks. This is a tough one. Heartbreaks can take a long time to heal. Your heart is locked as your mind keeps on hovering over the same thought. The thing to realize is that in heartbreak, it's not the loss that makes you suffer, but the idea you create in your heads about that loss. So let them go. Let go of bad memories. Sometimes we remember unpleasant things that stir up some sad feelings in us, and bad memories may make you relive those sad moments in the present. They can also affect your health. So keep them where they are, guys, in the past. Remember, there's only 2 days in the world in which you can accomplish nothing, okay? What are those 2 days? They're yesterday and they're tomorrow, okay? So you have today. That's it. You have the moment that we're in right now, all right? Let go of useless things. We also attach ourselves to things of all sorts. Sometimes we clutter our lives with useless objects. Let go of them. Simplify your working and your living environment. Declutter. Declutter your environment. You'll declutter your brain. You'll be surprised. Learn to let go of bad company. If there are people around you who are insincere, harbor envy, or are highly pessimistic or disempowering, get them out of life. There's no call for that. The idea that you are a product of your past. One very common mistake we all fall to is the belief that we are determined by our past experiences. This is obviously a limiting view on future possibilities, since we are stuck in believing that the future can only be more of the same as our past. Let go of identifying yourself with a job or a role. This is one of the risks of modern society. Since roles are always becoming more specialized, we think that we are part of our roles. This makes us lose perspective on our true nature. Let go of taking things too personally. Let go of the ticking clock, you guys. Let go of counterproductive habits. We can move it into a new year. This is the time to turn it all around. Anyways, we've got to go to a 3-minute break. I hope you guys recognize that some of those things can be changes that we'll make each of our lives. We'll be right back after 3 minutes, guys, with Andrew Dodds, where we get into the economy stuff. Keep it right here, 3-minute break.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are moving into the second hour of our broadcast today. It is my favorite hour of the broadcast because it's obviously when we bring in some of the greatest guests imaginable on the planet, and it's always the segment in which I learn the most, and I hope all of you out there are ready to learn quite a bit today because we are once again joined by the one and only Andrew Gause. Very, very excited to have him join us on the show. Those of you guys who don't know who Andrew Gause is, he's a nationally recognized U.S. monetary historian, also a numismatist, so somebody with a wide variety of expertise in money and in coin. A very, very interesting subject just in and of itself. So been reporting Americans about the pitfalls of the electronic banking transaction system and a big brother as we move into a cashless society. He's been studying about and lecturing about the problems, and so we're connected to our monetary for more than 2 decades. He tells challenging questions about America's real economic future and provides behind-the-scenes insight as to how the politicians and bankers in D.C. plan to secretly deal with the debt crisis, which is obviously exploding more and more. I think what would we add another $1 trillion in the last 12 weeks? Just absolutely unbelievable. So first of all, Andrew Gause, thank you very much for joining us on the program today, sir.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness, you're one of my favorite guests. And, you know, economics to me, I took a class in college, and I thought at the time, well, this is pretty simple, right? You know, supply, demand, yep. Fundamentals, all of that
sure.
Kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then you come out into the real world and start looking around and say, hey, none of this jives anymore. So I need to have people like you in my life, Andrew, because I am not prepared to deal with $18 trillion of debt, another $1 trillion. In the last 12 weeks. So many things that we could talk about right now. Obviously, you want to talk a little bit about Russia. Probably this shale collapse in the country is a big deal. But before we get into all of that, is there anything else we need to know about your background and expertise that you bring to the table, sir?
Oh, yeah. I buy and sell gold and silver American coins. That's my passion. So I put together collections of early American gold and silver. And I guess once you realize what money is, and more importantly, what it isn't, if you're going to store wealth, you might as well store it in the Constitution as money. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I specialize in. That's my stock and trade. Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
So if anybody out there has any earning coins they want to sell, I'm certainly a buyer.
And your websites, andrewgause.com and also usgoldcoins.com, those are the two best places to find you, sir?
Yeah, correct. USGoldCoins.com is the commercial side. That's where we offer to buy and sell American coins.
Mm-hmm.
And then AndyGoss.com, it's kind of like my reading room. You pop in and have a look, see what you see, old newsletters in there. You can go back the last 10, 20 years, I think, and see what I was saying then. Compare that to what's now.
Okay, sounds good to me, and that's certainly a recommendation that we have here from redpillreports.com. Go check out your website. Where would you like to begin today? I think, personally, I'd like to talk a little bit about being in Russia, because I am reading so many conflicting reports of whether you're either here or there. Fundamentally, that's what it's coming down to. You know, which of these two currencies, the ruble or the U.S. dollar, which of the two economies actually has more fundamental strength now? I think it's made either direction, but I'd certainly like really your take on what is going on in Russia this last week in a, you know, a roller coaster over the first.
You know, there will be an economy and we get to the point that it is a larger store of. So, when internally, no one accepts your money, and internally, it's shunned like a hot potato, then pretty soon there's really no value, because there is no substance. So, this is really what's happening to the ruble, and the central bank is doing everything it can to prop it up, but in reality, it's like a fat man jumping off the ground. There is no support, and that is, of course, the Russian ruble today.
Mm-hmm. And what has been the response of the people?
Well, the people of Russia, I'll tell you what they for a story of a Russian going with his paycheck, and he sees, of course, a line of people standing in front of a store. He doesn't know what the store is. He doesn't know what they're selling, but he gets in line. And because whatever it is, it's going to be worth more rubles tomorrow. And he lines at the other stores because they have no goods to sell at all. So he'll wait in that line for whatever is for sale at the end of the line, for which he'll gladly exchange his rubles. And then the next day he'll have a pair of sneakers to barter with or whatever it is that he bought. They realize quickly holding their wealth in the ruble is a thing. It's like having your work stolen, having your money stolen. So they'll get out of it as quickly as they can and into anything, and I mean literally anything.
Well, and that's exactly what we saw, and that was one of the things that struck me when I'm looking at all the pictures from Russia, is that it's not necessarily the staples at the store they're looting. Oh, they're not
anything.
There. It's any, and I mean, the lines are at IKEA, you know. Talk about, just for a second, the relationship, because I don't really fully grasp it, so I'm sure there are people who are sure than I am. But talk about the relationship between the value of your currency and the ability to import goods and export goods, and how that inverse relationship actually works, or how it's supposed to work according to the fundamentals. Because, you know, again, what I saw in the pictures from Russia is people lined up at IKEA. You know, they're buying imported goods because of some reason. And Apple even decided to stop selling in Russia because they were apparently losing their shirt. So I know there has to be some sort of relationship going on between the value of their currency and import versus export. So could you kind of clarify?
Yeah, it's probably a good time to talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah, roger that. Let's do it.
Yeah, because, you know, that all ties in together, folks, to understand the only way that anything that gives a currency value other than its actual substance. See, when a currency has substance, made of gold or made of silver, made of copper, then the value kind of transfers with the transaction. But when it's a fiduciary currency and you're relying on someone else to extend or to lend value to that unit, then their actions have everything to do with what you're doing. And the value of that money is tied to an external source of which you have no concern. So it is imperative that if going to denominate your wealth, especially if you're forced, like the people of Earth, to denominate wealth in this unit, then you have to get out of it quickly, and, you know, you're in, you're out. So why would they line up at IKEA? Well, because whatever they buy at IKEA is going to cost 20% more than the Russian. Even the loss to that would make them better off. So how is it? It's relative to the Bitcoin, because without a central bank of any substance, people rush in, if they're not going to save and store and hold that Bitcoin or that ruble as a means of the future, you know, storing their future wealth, then that has none to give it value. There's nothing to lend it value. It's back in the marketplace as quickly as it's used. Mm-hmm. This is the problem with the rule, is that since no one is willing to hold it, it's the opposite, 100% of a reserve currency like our dollar, where, you know, once we send a dollar out into circulation, there are people that want to grab it and store it and hold it wherever you use it to be. In that 80% of the world's trade is conducted in dollars, and you know, no percent of the world's trade is conducted in rubles.
Right.
So it is that relationship that makes it impossible for a country to print its way out of its problems. Because A, no one outside the country wants to accept currency, and then now no one inside the country can either. So as quick as someone is on a ruble, they put it back into circulation to buy anything. Again, I'll emphasize other than the ruble.
Okay.
So don't be surprised you see them lined up at IKEA. I mean, if they could line up at, you know, at anything, at a toy store, it doesn't matter. Where the funny thing I noticed in the last time this happened, because they've been through this before, the fall of the Soviet Empire is a great learning experience, is that they whatever was for sale at the end of the line, that's what they stood in line for.
Hmm.
So it really was of no concern to them. Whatever that item was irrelevant. What was known is that it was something of substance that would hold its value better than the ruble.
Well, and if there's a line of people there lining up for something, and they're not lining up for
there
a ruble,
there is something there.
Yeah, so
exactly.
You obviously
yeah.
want something that people want. So, you know, you can look at the
yeah.
line and say,
yeah, well, they know, and it is the fact that there is a manufactured good for sale, or there is some sort of good for sale at the end of that line. And that, of course, has more value than the ruble does. Now, we're not used to this. We've not seen this. The last inflationary surge of this sort that we had that shifted the behavior pattern in the United States was from 77 to 80. You know, we've been, believe it or not, during the last 7 years of this crisis, we have accumulated the bank. So MZM, which you get from the same head, by the way, you want to really track what Americans are doing with maturity is money that's available in your checking account, in our cash. I would not invest anything. Liquid money. And money with a zero maturity has doubled in the last 7 years. We've from $6 trillion to $12 trillion. We've socked away into our bank accounts.
Wow.
Because we're doing the exact opposite of what we should do with it.
Okay, so looking at that, I want to know a little. I don't know if you know about the Russian fundamentals. What is their GDP ratio? Things like, I read these. I really kind of think that the Russian economy is a bit more than our economy. You know, I don't know that's necessarily true, but in terms of, they have less than $1 trillion worth of debt versus our $18 trillion worth of debt. They
same thing though.
Is it in
we
terms
have stated
of
debt? We have off-the-books debt, so do they.
Okay.
Right. But the real thing that gives Russia the ruble any value at all, really, is the productivity of the Russian people, right? Same thing. And so the oil, obviously, and natural resources are what they count on to keep the flow of rubles circulating. And in their case, they're a hard dollar export in the form of oil. How that should bring currency into countries such as euro and dollars,
right?
In exchange for the rubles that they put into circulation. That's, they entered it with the index in those foreign and now they give their some sense by dollars in the start of the world to do that.
Okay.
So, that's the basic of their strength. Now, this, I'll call the currency board model. It's deployed in Iraq, for example. If the Iraqi central bank wants to issue a dinar, it has to first have a dollar, which it puts in a vault. And that dollar effectively backs that dinar. And so to the people, it may appear that it is the dinar that's circulating, but in reality, it's the dollar. So as long as this system is set up, then this gives strength to the existing power structure, the Federal Reserve and the entities that support it and surround it. And to the extent that competing currencies attempt to take away that reserve status, then that's when they're under attack. They find themselves, you know, threatened. And this has been the case through 2019. They've slowly marched towards a single world currency. You know, it's to say, yeah, we're due currency, but it won't be us. It's just due to the rest of the world. The jewelry has cemented its domination over the world for years. Few banks that are driven off the road right now, out of their mouth, never stronger. I don't see anything to threaten their domination.
Wow. That's a lightning thing. I know everyone knows that. I'm hoping. I know people do forums, what they call, you know, the underground news, and I just afraid that there's going to be some kind of doom that'll be big enough that they won't have to go to work, you know?
That's true.
But I want to know...
Well, I know people who secretly wish for a crash or collapse because it is within this fertile soil that the seeds of revolution can be planted, you know? Yeah. People, when they're happy and they're complacent, and yeah, their dollar's worth a little more this year, it was worth a little less last year, and then that's what happens. It's a fact of life. As long as they continue to store their wealth and dollars and go to work every day and deliver dollars into the circulatory stream, then they're all good. Everything's fine. And it would only take some sort of a crash or collapse to really catalyze Americans into the action, the sort of action that many feel we need, you know, cleansing,
yes,
starting from scratch, which we didn't have during the last crash.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this one's going to be much, much worse than the last one also, because, you know, we're talking about the mortgage crisis quite a bit here on the show. We've been in touch with Greg Morse and Scott Bennett, and this is obviously a huge, huge story as we really start to uncover some of the collusion that's gone on, you know, sucking wealth out of your own home, turning that into a derivative, and then leveraging that by 1,000%, and then funding terrorism with that. We know that that chain of events has taken place, but it doesn't seem like anybody, I mean, I'm reading reports now of all the banks basically lowering their underwriter standards once for mortgages. See the prime crisis basically occurring right now. The auto lending industry, and talking about that, there's these, you know, are we going to do another housing crisis take two? Did they get the beta version figured out last time? Like, what? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, but I understand that it is monetization of debt that fuels the growth of the economy. And without the monetization of debt, there is nothing. Because we do so to care for the existing load. Mm-hmm. So we must monetize debt. This is sort of the, you know, it's like the cocaine. You remember the old cocaine commercials? I work so I can buy, you make money so I can buy cocaine so I go to work. So I can, yeah, like a monster. Well, this is the sort of the fuel that we use, and without debt, there's no growth, period.
Hmm.
So, and they in debt, we get mechanics by the Chicago Fed, you know, big source material.
Yeah.
I'll send you to the same Fed to get monetary fix. I'll send you to Chicago still free to learn on the, you can understand, you know, exactly what I do. To lower gold standard, seemingly another bubble. But, you know, in reality right now, it is mortgage-backed securities backing the dollar. So the very toxic Fed, since we're at 30% on the dollar, let's move to California, you know, is now backing the dollar. If you look at the balance sheet, you'll find $1.3 trillion of mortgage-backed securities. Now, what was the basis to this? $3 billion worth of mortgages. So good ones, bad ones, ugly ones, and they're all together. Security issues on those mortgages. So who's complaining right now? The guy whose house is foreclosed upon and he's trying to figure out who really owns the title, or it's the person who's bought the sheriff's sale deed and is now holding a questionable piece of real estate. So what's going to happen going forward? I think they're going to do a gigantic flush, reissue all new paper, which they've been doing for the last 5 years. They've been taking out the bad paper, putting in paper.
Okay.
And I would look more at student loan area. But to really where they perfect the art that they learned in the motor.
And extrapolate that a little bit for people who may not understand the sizable outstanding student loan packages that are going on.
Right. Perhaps you're not familiar with the size of the check, Mr. Yeah. Mellon. There's a trillion dollars in student loans outstanding where you can't walk away from. So kids are coming out of school with a mortgage and a house to foreclose on. You know, they foreclose on the body. Because anytime you work, anytime you get a tax return, it's susceptible to seizure. You cannot escape student loan debt.
Right.
And so the lessons learned in the mortgage market have been really transferred to the market. And, you know, it's a simple math there. You're kind of seized onto the body, whereas whether or not you're seized onto the house and a mortgage is questionable. You know, I just separate the mortgage and the note. Did you assign it to the state law? With the student crisis, it's exactly what it is. We've the generation of our children into slavery.
Yes.
And so we're going to have abject wage slaves that are going to spend their entire life paying to show. It's really, I think, a bigger crisis than the mortgage crisis.
I have to tell you, though, there is a little bit of remedy for those of you guys out there who really want to take control of the contracts. I won't get into this a whole lot because Andrew's on the phone, but I wrote a letter to the U.S. Department of Education regarding my loans about 7 years ago, and it was a very well-worded, grammatically accurate record, and they have yet to respond, and I do not anticipate them responding at all. So there are techniques out there for explaining to them that there really is no money of value, you know, on the planet with which to pay that debt, and getting them to understand that in an affidavit type form can get you out of a lot of trouble. But just I'll digress away from that. Anybody wants to say?
Oh no, you don't have to digress from that, because obviously that leads back to the Green River decision and, you know, all money, right? Everything about money. What is money? And whether or not you owing dollars. And I'm using my air quotes here.
Right.
Well, and hey, if someone is willing to really take that giant leap and take the red pill, hey, wait a minute.
Hey, well, that's funny how that came. I have a letter. I have a letter template that I'll be happy to send to people. Again, I don't give legal advice, but I have a letter template that I use that asks five very simple questions. And essentially what it comes down to is, once you understand contract law, there has to be some very specific things that go on when you're signing a contract, one of which is that the other party has to tell you everything that is on the table. And that's where we run into the rub, is because banks these days monetize promissory notes. So they will come and they'll sit you in an office with their nice $2,000 suits on, and they'll say, yes, Mr. Moore, I have this money sitting in my vault ready to go. As soon as you sign that thing, I will go into my vault and I will give you that money. But that's not exactly what happens at all. They take that promissory note and then they enter that into the computer, and that's what monetizes it. So you need to understand that you are the creditor, not the bank. Your signature and your promise to pay is what creates all the credit on the planet, which means you are the most powerful person that exists, really, fundamentally. And so if you can prove that a contract was entered into without them divulging information to you or all of the information, that means you are not able to duly consider said information, and without considering information, that contract is non-binding. Am I correct in saying those things, do you think, there?
Yeah, simple meeting of the minds. If there wasn't a meeting of the minds, then there couldn't have been a contract. If you didn't know that you were required to perform certain things that weren't spelled out for you, it'd be like you buying a dryer at Sears and then signing a contract with Sears to deliver the dryer and find out that you had to buy the truck at the same time. You know, you have to be revealed everything that is included in the contract. If there's no meeting of the minds, yes, you understood what you're buying, they understood what they were selling, then there is no contract. I'll tell you, I have these silver certificates that were issued in the 1950s by the federal government that document, of course, that there is on deposit in the United States Treasury $1 in silver payable to the bearer on demand.
Yes.
Clear meeting of the minds, signed by the Secretary of the Treasury, dated, and meets every element of a contract, as I know it, in contract law, but yet they won't give me my silver dollars.
Yeah.
So
I have that same issue, man. I had to cash a paycheck about a year ago, and it was a personal check that somebody had written to me, and they were at the bank of U.S., you know, U.S. Bank. So I went in there, and I said, you know, I'd like to cash this check. And they said, well, you don't have an account here, so we have to charge you $5. And I looked at the check, and I said, that's interesting.
Going on this bank.
That's not written in this contract anywhere. You know,
this is a
contract. And the lady said, well, I still have to take, you know, it's bank policy. And I said, well, I'm not a member of your bank, so I'm not actually subject to your bank policy. And if you take $5 from me, you know, against this, out of context of this contract that I'm holding in my hands right now, which is what a check is, I'm going to call the police and I'm going to have you arrested for theft. And any of you people who are an agent for this corporation that thinks that you can subject me to contract law that doesn't exist, we're going to have a problem. And I'll tell you what, that lady gave me my $5, and because she, I don't know, maybe she didn't want to fight me, but, you know, once you really understand contract law, I think that is a big win, for the population of the people, don't you think?
Well, yeah, you know, you take lemons and make lemonade, no doubt about it, because I think the merger of law and equity and putting, you know, everything under the U.S. Commercial Code in 66 really, I thought that was sort of the death knell of America, you know,
right?
The merger of law and equity.
Mm-hmm.
But my attitude has changed in the last decade or so. It is one of use the fine print against them. I mean, they've been using it against you for, you know, 200 years.
So, like the guy, did you hear about the story? I think it was last year where a guy got a credit card application in the mail, right? And so he took it, he put it into his computer, and because when they send you a contract like that before they sign it, that's an offer. That's an offer for contract. That's all that is. So he took it and he redesigned the terms into a way that he, you know, felt was more beneficial to him. Signed it and sent it back to the credit card company, and they took it and said, okay, and they issued him a card, and then all of a sudden they're saying, you know, you missed this payment, and now you owe us this, and he goes back and says, well, I've got this original contract that you guys signed that says none of that, and the judge had to rule in his favor. They ruled against the credit card company, and the credit card said, well, this guy, you know, used tricky language to get us into a position that we didn't understand. And the judge said, yeah, welcome to reality, guys. You know, you're subject to it just like everybody else is. So,
And I noticed they're changing the fine print. So now anytime you find fine print that, of course, turns a banker on his head, then they quickly run to Congress and change the law.
Yes.
So, you know, you better act fast if you find yourself in this position, because they'll quickly legalize the theft.
Yeah, and I think we need to come back. We got about a 3-minute break that we're getting ready to go to, but when we come back, I would like to talk. I'm sure, I don't know if you've had time to read, I think it was initially 1,600 pages, but they snuck in, I think, another 174. So we're up to 1,774 pages from this big ominous bill. But obviously, a lot of changes took place in that.
Yeah.
So we shall come back from the break and we'll talk about that. And I want to talk a little bit about the shale economy here in the country. So keep it right here, guys. This is your Daily Dose of Geek Programming, and we are joined by Andrew Gause today. It's fascinating stuff. We'll be right back. Keep it here, guys.
So you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear. Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com.
iodine.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want.
Ever since our Google Plus integration, we've seen a 30% reduction in racist and bigoted comments. People are even starting to notice the complete lack of bigoted comments, and frankly, they miss them. To make up for this deficit, we have added auto-commenting bots to YouTube Plus that can be set to either type racist or hateful comments. Similar to the auto-comment bot, we've created the auto-spam bot, which allows terrible YouTubers to beg people to watch their horrible excuses for videos they put out. These comments can go out to every video they've ever interacted with.
Hey guys! So we're like really wanting to be filmmakers on YouTube, and we'd totes appreciate it if you come watch our videos and comment, like, and subscribe. That'd be totes amazeballs. Yeah, we really like subscribers.
YouTube Plus. We own you!
Sound Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 19th day of December, and we are in the second segment with our guest today. Of course, we're speaking with Andrew Gauz today, who is a U.S. monetary historian, a numismatic expert, and probably one of the smarter people that I have met in terms of the economy. So I'm very thankful for him joining us today. And I got to be honest, Andrew, I know the shale thing is a huge issue right now, but I have to be really concerned personally. Well, not personally, because I don't use a bank, but the thing that really concerns me the most about the United States economy is that that thin line that separates normal depositors' bank accounts from the risky, you know, gambling that the banks are all doing these days, that thin line seems to be getting thinner and thinner and thinner as we move forward. What do you know about that?
Okay, so you'd have to look back at the last major financial collapse, what we all call the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Now, I would argue that the Depression of 1873 was much worse, or 93 even, but we all focus on this one. Okay, so what did they learn from that? Well, they learned that when the banks were allowed to take the depositors' money and invest in things that were less than sound, risky. If they lost, they couldn't pay back their depositors. So Congress wisely chose to prevent them from doing that. So you had to decide in 1933, are you going to be an investment bank and you're going to gather up deposits from rich people and make investments? And if you win, great. If you lose, well, those people lose their money. Or you're going to be a commercial bank that has checkings and savings accounts for regular people, and you're going to make loans to these same regular people based on strict lending standards. And if you make that decision, you pick which arena you want to play in, and then you move forward. That's what they did. So a great many of the major banks, J.P. Morgan is a classic example. You had J.P. Morgan Company, which was an investment bank, and you had Chase Manhattan, which was a commercial bank. Now, this worked fine for 70 years. I mean, with a de facto gold standard where obviously we weren't allowed to check, but foreigners will, the banking community operated just fine. J.P. Morgan was an investment bank for all investment banks. You know, if you were rich and you wanted to put money with them and they would go out and invest it, well, then you were free to do that. Of course, if they lost your money, well, they lost your money. The only way they could get money for their investment pools was to borrow it from rich people. Mm-hmm. Well, they like the aspect of having commercial deposits, and so I guess 99, last thing Bill Clinton did, with the urging of Robert Rubin and Larry Summers, was to eliminate the Glass-Steagall Act, the deregulation of the banking industry. And quickly, J.P. Morgan and Chase merged again. And so now the investment side had access to the commercial side's deposits. So now they could effectively borrow the depositors' money and go out and buy mortgage-backed securities, which is effectively what the banks did. Mm-hmm. And these risky investments, of course, were not sound. When J.P. Morgan himself was called to testify before Congress in 1907, they said, "What do you think caused the panic of 1907?" He said, "Somebody asked for a dollar." And, you know, that is essentially what happened in this crash. People started to get nervous. They started pulling their money out of the bank. The bank, having all the money invested in mortgage-backed securities, couldn't repay their depositors, so they start selling the securities. And there was no market for them. Nobody wanted them in the first place.
Right.
That was when it was quickly realized that they were filled with air. You know, you can't take a bundle of $10 million worth of mortgages, put them in a pile, wave a wand over them, and make $20 million worth of mortgage-backed securities, but that's what they did.
Right.
So the value wasn't there. The substance wasn't there. It was taken long before in bonuses and excess earnings by the banks. And so the marketplace said 30 cents on the dollar, boys. That's all this debt is worth. And quite frankly, that would have made the banks, every bank in the country, insolvent. So that's when the Fed decided to step in and said, okay, we'll monetize these loans for you. So as you can see, without Glass-Steagall, the banks could not have done this. They could not have bought the mortgage-backed securities.
But that,
they
that
certainly
happened,
could not have been.
That happened way back in 99. Surely we've learned the lesson by now, and we've got all kinds of legislation in place to make sure that doesn't happen again, right?
Okay, well, that's the so-called Volcker Rule, right? Okay, what we need to do is eliminate proprietary trading. So we have to stop the banks from taking the money and investing it on their own for their own account. They can only do trades. We'll still allow them to make investments, but they can only make investments based on what their customers want. So this really is the golden key, you know.
Okay.
We're hanging our hat on this idea that banks will no longer be able to trade for their own account, but that's their business model. They make a profit on these extraordinary trades, they keep that, and then they give their depositors a pittance in return. But if they lose money, why then they turn to the taxpayer and to the government to bail them out. So this is their model, and to take away proprietary trading takes away their ability to do so. So these banks have grown into international giants that think now, well, okay, we'll just set up an office in London, and we'll do all that trading there, where we're outside of the scrutiny of U.S. regulators. So this tangled web is now turned into a global giant that is dragged in, well, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, Barclays. We have, you know, foreign banks with access to our printing press, so they can monetize debt as well.
Wow.
And that's where the real danger zone begins. So as much as I lament the elimination of Glass-Steagall, this concept, this prospect of international banking with the Fed at the center, at the core, means that the dollar, again, becomes the one world currency that we've all worried about.
Right. Well, and essentially you're outlining a global too-big-to-fail banking system now, as opposed to just the one that we saw here in the United States.
Precisely.
Wow.
Precisely, yeah. It's a much bigger problem. So what we learned from it last time is that we can handle it, no matter how big the scale.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get into the shale thing right now, because obviously, you know, the falling price of oil is a major, major factor for a lot of countries around the world right now. And I want to also ask you if this falling price of oil, also in line with the sanctions against Russia, would you consider the falling price of oil to be some sort of economic policy being used as a weapon against Russia right now also, in addition
no
to...
No question.
Sanctions? Okay.
Yeah, no question. Not just Russia, Venezuela, Nigeria,
right.
A couple other rogue countries. You know, killing more than two birds with one stone is part of the beauty of this plan. But I think the real issue that we should look at is, you know, when Jimmy Carter was president and we were importing a huge amount of foreign oil, so dollars were going overseas, oil was flowing into the United States. So every time you got in your car and drove a mile, you were subtracting from GDP. because obviously the money you paid at the gas station went to the refinery that went to the oil producer in Saudi Arabia, and they built all these nice buildings and these big islands, and it was all like fancy and fun.
Right.
Tons of money was made, but it was subtractive to GDP. Our domestic productivity fell every time you drove a mile. Well, once oil prices started to rise and we recognized that we had oil in areas we didn't know, shale, fracking, natural gas is another arena, energy, we'll call it broadly. So now energy consumption became additive to GDP, not subtractive. So every time we burned a barrel of oil, it funded a job in North Dakota. It funded a job on a railroad or a restaurant worker in Colorado who was supporting a shale oil a driller. Well, this, of course, has been the only bright spot in our economy for the last 7 years.
Right.
And, in fact, in the last 5 years, 1.5 million new jobs have been created in this field alone. And I'm not referring to support jobs at all. You know, never mind the stores and the restaurants and the realtors and everybody who made a living because suddenly the economy picked up. But I'm speaking to people that are directly involved in the oil drilling industry. They made up for the 400,000 jobs that were lost in every other area in the country. So imagine if we did not have this industry fueling the economic growth. The joke is, of the 1.1 million new jobs created in the last 5 years, 1.5 million were created in the oil industry, meaning they made up for the 400,000 that were lost and still contributed 1.1 million new jobs.
Wow.
The whole key there is $64 a barrel oil. When oil is above $64 a barrel, it's very profitable to do this stuff. When oil is below $64 a barrel, it's not profitable anymore.
Okay.
And so now you start laying those people off.
And
they
also
start collecting unemployment.
All of the ancillary businesses, you know, the places in North Dakota where the guys are camping out in trailers, you know, all those ancillary businesses, the restaurants, all that stuff goes away.
Yeah, right. They all go home. And everyone's now back on unemployment, and there is no business being done. Exactly correct. So as great as it is for the consumer, we got an extra $25 a week in our pocket. Now the production shifts from North Dakota back to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So their secret is that between $30 and $50 a barrel, they're making money. So
that's because their wells are
for them.
They don't have to do anything. It just bubbles up out of the ground. Yeah, I mean, really, honestly, they've got artesian oil wells there. That's why Iraq, before we got there, they were paying 9 cents a gallon for gas. I mean, boy, that must have been rough, right? Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, domestically, of course. And the same is true in Venezuela. Well, and now Russia, to a large extent, finds that its entire federal budget is based on this same kind of $65 an oil barrel figure. And below that, suddenly they can't meet their foreign reserve requirements. So the Russians, at the end of this fiscal year, at the end of this year, December 31st, have a huge pile, billions and billions of dollars worth of dollar-denominated loans coming due. Mm. And so they have to gather up a bunch of dollars in order to pay that. And we've put the squeeze on them like never before. Mm-hmm. Between the sanctions and the encouragement of this Saudi action,
aren't we shooting ourselves in the foot, though? I mean, to accomplish what we're accomplishing.
Bit.
Okay, so how do you justify that? And why do you pick the $64 because I've been asking everybody that, and I've heard 70, 80, 60, 20, you know, 64, that's a pretty arbitrarily specific number.
Well, it's a number that I got from an actual guy who said below $64, he's laying his people off. So, you know, that's the number I use. Now, if you throw in cost to transport and all these other costs, I imagine the number probably would reach $70 by the time it gets to the refinery. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're talking about the guy who's drilling it out of the ground, who has the bulk of the employees that are handling it, the trucks that are moving it. You know, he can't do that work with OSHA and American wage scale for less than $64 a barrel. He just can't do it. He's not poking a hole in the ground. He has a very a mining operation, in effect. Mm-hmm. So,
and so yeah,
that,
and also,
that seems to be the breaking point.
Right. And then you also look at the fact that OPEC, you know, obviously says even if we hit $40, if we hit $40, maybe 3 months after that, we'll have a meeting and talk about doing something. So obviously between you've got them using language that suggests that the price is going to stay very low. You've got the Fed coming out yesterday and saying we're going to be real patient when it comes to raising interest rates, because if we raised them, we'd destroy the economy. We don't want to talk about that. So obviously, you can see the commodity market kind of come down again as people flood back into stocks because happy days are here again. But then what I want to talk about then is what are the other dominoes are going to start to fall? I keep hearing this word junk bonds coming up and talking about, you know what I mean? In terms
16%.
Of the sale.
Yeah, 16% of the bond, junk bond market, the high yield bond market, is related to oil or oil exploration. So it's either, you know, getting oil out of the ground that we already know we have, or going to look for oil. And Wells Fargo and Barclays and several others, I mean, I'm counting on the first quarter huge write-offs by these banking entities, because their loans will be non-performing. So as the entities that they've loaned money to, see, for the last 3 years, the American consumer has been viewed as not a credit-worthy lender, borrower,
right,
while a hedge fund that might want to go drill for oil, you know, they are a credit-worthy borrower. So all of the money's been funneled into these junk bonds, which yield something greater than a 2% return, and so this chasing of yield has caused enormous risks to be taken once again with taxpayer-backed money, Wells Fargo and obviously Barclays Bank. So as they take these huge write-offs against profits, that might cause some bit of concern within the rest of the market, what I call pinata effect. You know, people look and say, how might I be affected? Let me smack my bond as well. And curiously, though, the banks, the commercial banks themselves, have $2.3 trillion on deposit at the New York Fed in the form of excess reserves. So it is now that I would suspect that you'll see a wave of mergers and acquisitions as this money gets borrowed and put into circulation to buy all of these distressed shale properties, oil drillers, oil drilling platforms. They'll probably fan into Venezuela, foreclose on everything in sight, and buy what they can't foreclose. And certainly a consolidation within the oil industry will occur. And once again, the same people that own and control the Fed will find their friends and associates in control in that arena as well. So this entire new discovery of shale oil and the wildcatters and the guys that are out there, independent operators, they'll be gone. It'll be back to the boys running the show again.
Right. And I, you know, and I've read, again, and I'll keep coming back to this point, $2 a gallon gas is fantastic, but you have to be employed in order to actually have an income.
To buy it, yeah.
To be able to buy it. Talk a little bit about how the shale, the junk bond market, and all that might actually affect people's 401ks and, you know, their pension funds, things like that, because I think there's a connect there that people aren't getting.
Yeah, so I talk to folks every day, you know, and I say to them, when we talk about investments, because folks invest in gold and silver coins, many do. So as I talk about their portfolios, or what's your investment in? Well, we're invested in mutual funds. Okay, what kind of mutual funds? What are the mutual funds invested in? Crickets.
Right.
You know,
what's
silent.
A mutual fund? Right.
What's well, that's what I invested in. It's a mutual fund. Yeah, but what do they invest in?
Right.
I don't know. All right, well, let's start with that. Let's look at the prospectus. Oh, look, your mutual fund has loaned money to oil drillers and oil operators up and down the Midwest. And looks like several of them are getting ready to go belly up, and the bonds are not going to be any good, which is going to cause the mutual fund to fall in value. So now all of your neighbors who have money in the same mutual fund and get their statement and see, the mutual fund went down this month, dear. Let's sell it. Now the call for redemption comes. Give us our money back.
Right.
Well, we can't. We loaned it to the guy to drill oil. And this, of course, has a cascading effect that you can't even begin to imagine. So pension funds, profit-sharing plans, mutual funds, money market funds, all of them have the same exposure. Just because you put your money in a money market fund or mutual fund, I'm not invested in oil. I'm in the money market fund. Okay. you better find out who your money market fund is loaning the money to, because I assure you, you are exposed. And not only are you exposed, but you're going to take the hit. The Reserve already broke the buck during the last crisis. Many people didn't even notice. But if you wanted to cash in your $1 mutual fund shares of the Reserve during the height of the crisis, you were only getting 94 cents. So this idea that, you know, that dollar is a dollar no matter what is not true. And never mind that your direct deposits in your banking accounts can now be discounted before they're given back to you. But imagine that your mutual fund would be worth less than a dollar. And that's a frightening thought to anyone who has a mutual fund.
Especially those of us who went through everything that happened back in 08 with our 401ks. I mean, mine took a 50% hit right off the bat, you know, just staggering. So, okay, if you had to put a timeline, because obviously we're talking about a series of events as the dominoes are falling here. Let's just say, hypothetically, we stay below $64. How soon are people going to really start noticing an effect? You know, not the guys who are really, you know, well, watching Bloomberg every day, but just the average mom and pop at home that have the mutual fund or the 401k. How long do you think it's going to be until we really start seeing the evidence of the shale collapse showing up in our personal lives?
Yeah, first reporting period of 2015, so that's going to put us around the end of the first quarter of 2015, March. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, then given
and
all
that's
of that,
when the first signs will certainly there'll be talk about it between now and then, but right. that's when the envelopes will start getting opened, you know, and the losses will be in your face, sort of not on Bloomberg, but in your envelope, in your mailbox.
Wow. So we could have a very interesting spring is what we're saying right now.
Oh, indeed, yeah. Again, especially as it relates to our domestic productivity. If you shut down our oil industry, then the minor recovery that we've seen will disappear altogether. Unemployment rate will skyrocket. Federal debt will skyrocket. And our ability to meet these demands might suffer. So we're definitely on a fine line here pushing Russia. I would bet we'll see some sort of a settlement there, which will cause prices to stabilize in the $55 range. I don't think we'll go much lower.
Very interesting. Okay. Well, I want to highly recommend, again, everybody go to andygause.com, andygause.com, or go to usgoldcoins.com, both of which you can get all kinds of good investment information and opinion information from Andy about what's actually going on. And, Andy, we've got about 5 minutes left or so. What do you want to leave the people with here? Let's leave them with some hope on a Friday as to what we can do personally to try and, you know, since we can see the writing on the wall, what should we all be doing right now to better prepare?
Wow, talk about a softball. Don't ask a barber if you need a haircut.
Right. You know,
for me, I'm screaming from the rooftops. Now's the time to move dollars into hard assets. Anything tangible, physical, real, that's not based on somebody else's ability to perform. So for me, I've looked at everything there is to look at, and gold and silver coins, especially American gold and silver coins, are the only place that I see any hope. But I do see very bright hope there. Now, I have three audio CDs, though, and I guess educate yourself is probably the best thing you can do.
Right.
There are three audio CDs that I give away the most. One is called The Federal Reserve. That one deals strictly with how the Fed, there's so much disinformation about the Fed. You really need to educate yourself about that if you don't understand how that entity works. And the Federal Reserve CD is very useful for that. The second is the definition of money. What the heck is money? What is it? What is a dollar primarily? What I find people don't understand. So this ties in a little bit to what you were talking about. You know, there's no money in the world really. So look at what is a dollar and understand how it operates and how it functions, and that can best be done off this audio CD, The Definition of Money. And then the third one, Protecting Your Wealth. That's the one that tells you how to buy gold and silver coins and actually get what you're supposed to. So if you'd like all three of these CDs, you can have them for free if you'll just mention that you heard it on the Red Pill Report and call our 800 number. So it doesn't cost you anything. There's no obligation, and no one's going to hound you. So 800-468-2646. Just, again, mention the Red Pill, and we'll send those three CDs to you free, along with some newsletters and information on buying gold and silver coins. If you think it's for you, give us a call, 800-468-2646, and we'll get those out to you as soon as we can.
Man, that is such a great offer, Andrew. Thank you very much for making that offer to the listeners. That's just that's fantastic, because again, you know, we're all here trying to figure out not only what's going on. Until you can identify the problem, you can't come up with any kind of solution. So that's what we spend a lot of time here just going over. This is the matrix. These are all the layers of the matrix. And if you want to deal with any of them specifically, this is how you do it. And I'm glad that you just brought up the point regarding that third CD of how to buy and sell gold and silver properly and get what you expected, because that reminded me about that story that just came out of Germany, where they had a major trading platform just step away from physical this week, citing the fact that they couldn't identify where the sellers or the actual owners of the gold. So I'm starting to see the hints of the robo-signing starting to make itself apparent in the physical gold market again. Do you want to comment on that for just a sec?
Oh, yeah, you know it. I mean, I talk to people all the time when I say this sort of thing. Well, I have gold. Okay, well, tell me about it.
Right.
Well, here it is. Where is it? It's on this piece of paper. This outfit in Delaware has it stored in a vault. Or I have a contract that requires delivery on the COMEX. Or I have an option from the Chicago Futures Exchange. Or I have, GLD, exchange-traded funds. Or I have Sprott Fund or Central Fund of Canada. Every one of them all have the really same thing. It's that there's a pile of gold somewhere, and we own it, and here's your certificate that says you have a share of it. And I would just ask you this. If you're out in the middle of an ocean, and you're on an ocean liner, and the ocean liner starts to sink, do you want a life preserver or a certificate for a life preserver? That's essentially it, in a nutshell. You know, you, in a crisis, your gold may not be where it's supposed to be. It may not be delivered like it's supposed to be. So physical possession, number one rule. And these are the types of tips that you'll find out on this audio CD.
Wow, fantastic. Andrew Goss, thank you so much for joining us again on the Red Pill Reports broadcast today.
Thank you.
I hope we can have you back in the future. I know that I'm pretty sure next year everything is going to settle down in terms of the economy, right? It'll all be
not going to be anything exciting going on, exactly.
Can't imagine. Well, thank you again, as I said, for being here. I hope to look forward to talking to you again in the future. Please, everybody, go and check out the two websites, andygauss.com and usgoldcoins.com. Andy, once again, thank you for being here on the program today.
Yeah, sure. And if you're a Facebook fan, The Real World of Money on Facebook.
Hey, there you go. Real World of Money on Facebook. And you can probably find a link from the Red Pill Reports Facebook page. And you may not find it right now, but as soon as I get off the air, I'll go make a link from our Facebook page to your Facebook page. And then we can mutually share people that way. So that will, again, try and just keep spreading this message that there is a problem and that we have a solution. So, again, thanks, Andy,
all right,
for being here.
You bet.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, that has been the broadcast for the day, and that ends our week. I hope you guys have enjoyed all of the wonderful guests that we had this week. I want to remind everybody, Jamie Hanshaw will be again appearing on Monday. We're going to be talking about the MK Ultra program, mind control, just more elements of the matrix as we try and identify what the problems are so that we can properly identify some solutions. I hope you guys all have a wonderful weekend. I hope those of you who are in your holiday season are enjoying it right now. Take care, everybody. We will see you on Monday.
We think first of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research. But we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. Lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people, using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men. We want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. Did we put a baby in here? Yep.